if your child has more friends that are their own age, and then the perceived parental monitoring knowledge. So.
Yes, please.
First of all, excellent question.
Thank you.
I have a question for you. It's more a question about your data and whether I can be able to ascertain certain protective factors, resiliency, and others. The social control theory is great, but it implies that expression of risk is externally regulated.
Right.
And we know that there are certain things with certain people that even the absence of social monitoring aren't going to be great or engage in high risk behaviors.
That's true.
They talk about and focus on the risk rather than on resiliency or internal regulation that can be used to perhaps help people as they move past the point of their parents when they miss something.
Right. Unfortunately, I mean, we do have measures of self-esteem, and but unfortunately, I didn't actually examine that in my data. So that's a really interesting perspective, and I think if I do analyze more into parental monitoring, I think that's a really good component. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Great.
Our final presenter is Dr. Michelle Motapa with the Department of Health Science, California State University at Fullerton, California.
And if you see this little paper on your chair, I'm the associate editor for this journal. No financial interest, of course, just all service. But we're starting an online journal, and we're just getting it started up, so if you're interested in contributing, or being a section editor, we'd love to have you, or you'd love to talk to me, please, and we can get you on board. Okay, so today I'm talking a little bit more about what the kids are thinking, you know, before they drink alcohol, some of the specific consequences, why they might want to drink, and we're going to talk in some detail about that today. So is it because, well, I'm depressed, or is it because I want to be the life of the party, or is it because this, I like the buzz? Those kind of things. That's what we're going to be talking about today. Despite all these things, if you ask any adolescent what could happen if you drink, they can say, oh, yes, I could get in a car accident if I'm 16 years old and I've had a drink. I could get really drunk, really sick, really bad. But despite knowing those things, kids still drink. And why do they do it? Despite the fact that they know that these things can happen. And what we use here is something called a decision-making model, originated by Ward Edwards in 1954. This model has been used a lot in business and economics when it comes to making decisions regarding money. But we're applying it for substance use. And it's a combination of these three things right here. The first one is subjective value, so the extent to how much I value a given consequence happening. For example, enjoying the buzz. How valuable would that be to me? And then probability is how likely that is going to happen. Well, if I do have a drink, how likely is it that this buzz is going to happen? And then also there's something called momentary salience, which is how important is it to me now? As we all know, sometimes maybe a drink seems like something more important at the given moment. Maybe I'm at a party. But then maybe if I'm in the midst of working, that's not so important to me at the moment. Or maybe it is for some of us. Who knows? Okay, so we take all those things into consideration when we're thinking about one's likelihood of using alcohol. So kind of just went over it just now, the perceived value, and you can have a negative value or a positive value. So a negative value means I don't value this that much. I don't want this to happen. Okay, but a positive would be I want this to happen. And we can also have negative and positive consequences as well. So a negative consequence could be something like, I get really sick. That would be a negative consequence. Positive consequence could be, I'm very popular now. Okay. So when we have negative and positive consequences in this model, what we have to do is reverse code one of the categories of consequences, meaning the negative ones, and reverse coding it so they're all in the same direction, so that a higher score on this model would mean that I'm more likely to drink. Make sense? Okay. Okay. Subjective probability. So you can think of that as in percentages. Well, is this percent likely, that percent likely? It's not going to happen at all, or it's for sure it's going to happen. Okay. And then this is a relatively new parameter that we've included in the model. So Ward Edwards looked at value and likelihood. And if you look in the literature on alcohol use, you'll see a lot of literature on perceived value and likelihood. But the other thing that we added was the importance of now. How important is this consequence to you at the moment, given the situation that you're in, whether it be a party, whether you're at home, whatever the case is. So in our hypothesis, so what happened here is we had adolescents, and we actually had college students too. So we had one separate study where we looked at several middle school students and gave them the same kind of questions for this model. We also did the same with college students, university students at Cal State Fullerton, who were sophomore, junior standing. Okay, and what a couple of our hypotheses were the following, is that the perceived consequences of alcohol use across the three parameters I was talking about, okay, would differ across the ethnic groups. Okay, so do different ethnic groups have different perceptions regarding alcohol use? And then also, do these scores, the value, likelihood, momentary salience, when you put them together, would they predict actual alcohol use behaviors? Okay. So here are the methods. So as I said, there was two studies. The first one with the middle school students, that was part of a two-year longitudinal study in Southern California. So all this research was done in Southern California. The middle school students were surveyed in the seventh grade and then again in the eighth grade. And they're predominantly Latino and Asian American. We had pretty good retention, as you can see. Year one, we had 1,043 participants. Year two, we had 1,020 participants. For the other study, that was just a cross-sectional study. I had a little bit of seed funding to replicate this study with the college students. So this was a cross-sectional study of undergrads in Southern California, predominantly white, Latino, and Asian American. Sample size was 441. In both cases, it was a survey. It was a paper and pencil survey, and they did it during classroom time. Okay. And these were the consequences that we took into consideration. So when you see these 10 consequences for each of the studies, what we asked about is the value, for example, of becoming popular, and then the likelihood of becoming popular, and the momentary salience of becoming popular in regards to alcohol use. So if I drink, am I going to be popular? What's the likelihood of that? What's the value of being popular as a result of drinking alcohol? How important is it to you at the moment to become popular as a result of drinking alcohol? So we did these with the 10 consequences here, and we generated these 10 consequences for the adolescents based on previous research, where they ask open-ended questions, focus groups, coming up with the questions that were relevant to the kids, what the kids came up with, basically. These are the consequences they came up with. Okay, so this is from their perspective. With the college students, I did a little bit of pilot testing with open-ended questions, and these were the top 10 themes that came up. And so that's how I generated the 10 consequences for the college students. Okay. And this is the way the survey looks. Okay, so this is value. And we have the 10 consequences down here on each row, okay? And you can see that for value, you can have a negative value. Negative would be extremely bad. Positive would be extremely good. If you're on the fence, you'd be zero on that, okay? Not too valuable. Then we have likelihood. And we recoded these so that zero means completely unlikely, because you would think completely unlikely would be zero probability. So we rescored that from 0 to 5. Okay. And then momentary salience, same thing. Don't care at all would be a score of 0, because 0 would mean nothing. And all the way to 5, I care strongly. Okay. And so here's a highlight of the result. So the way this works, the previous... I don't know if I can go back. Can I? Oh, I can't. So what we do with each specific consequence is we take the value for example, becoming popular, times the likelihood for becoming popular, and the momentary salience for becoming popular. So what would so we multiply the three. So what would happen if you multiply the three and one of them is 0? Our answer would be a 0. So that means that if something might be very valuable to you, but there you think there's a 0 likelihood of that happening, your score would be 0 for that. Okay, so that's how this model works. And so what this model would say is if you have a 0, you don't have much of a propensity to use alcohol. Okay, so that's how the math works for the specific model. And here's the prevalence of alcohol use as well as smoking and marijuana use for this sample. Lifetime alcohol use, male and female, roughly similar, 32 and 36%, meaning have they ever had a drink? Okay, more than just a sip. Okay, and then past 30-day alcohol use was lower. Okay, 13% for the females, 15% for the males, 14% total. And we also looked at ethnic differences on perceived consequences. Okay, so when you see these negative means, okay, you can see overall the sample has negative means for this utility model, which means that they don't have a high propensity to drink alcohol, at least at this time. Okay, and we see the standard deviations are actually pretty big too. So you can see there's a lot of variation on these scores for utility. Okay, but what we found here is that, let's see, the Latinos have the lower negative score, which means they're a little bit more likely than the other groups to drink. Okay, a little bit more likely because they're less negative, if that makes sense. Okay, and that's why this model here was significant. And then we also looked at cross-sectional associations between the model and the actual behavior of drinking alcohol. So does this model, which suggests that alcohol behaviors are guided by a rational process where we weigh out the consequences, does that really hold to be true in this data set? And from what we can see, according to our data, lifetime drinking, no, the p-value is 0.94. But when it comes to past 30-day drinking, past week drinking, the answer is yes. So the more higher score that you have in this model, the more likely you are to drink. My thought for lifetime drinking, it could be that people just try once and they maybe didn't put as much thought into it. It was just a one-time occurrence. So that was the model wasn't as predictive for lifetime drinking in this case for the adolescents. And then also here's the utility scores by 30-day alcohol use. So if we took the score for each individual consequence separately, we can see consistently that the drinkers had a higher score, meaning a more of a propensity to drink. Okay, and it's pretty consistent. Their lines are pretty parallel. Higher scores, you can see, for example, for these adolescents, it seems like a big thing is enjoying the taste, because they're number 3, and they have higher scores up there in general, generally speaking across a sample, and also for number 8, feeling like an adult, as you can see. Okay. And then here's cross-sectional associations with, so we also had the year 2 data, which was the 8th grade, so we looked at cross-sectional associations in the 8th grade. And here we actually find significance all the way through. Okay. And probably what would have happened between 7th and 8th grade, a handful of those students would have taken up drinking since then. Okay. And then also what we did is look at 7th grade utility scores predicting 8th grade alcohol use. And we didn't see any significance. I've also looked at data with diet when it comes to utility of eating good foods in another study. And I found the same pattern with that too, where there was good cross-sectional associations, but when it comes to longitudinal associations, you don't find it. I'm not exactly sure why. My one thought is that when utility fluctuates over time, it just matters more what you're thinking at the time versus it predict your utility at one time predicting something later. But we have to explore that a little bit more. And this is study 2 with the college students. Okay, over here, of course we're going to have higher percentages. These are college students. When it comes to alcohol use, majority have had alcohol in their lifetime. Majority have had alcohol in the past 30 days. If you look at, I also got data on how many drinks they had last time they drank, and on average, it was kind of high, like 4. On average, 4 drinks the last time they drank. And also here we're looking at ethnic differences. Were no ethnic differences in this case with this university sample. And then we're looking at cross-sectional associations with utility scores and alcohol use. We also control for gender and GPA. When it came to the adolescents as well, we controlled for covariates that were significantly associated with alcohol use. But as you can see here, the utility scores were significant, which means that the utility model showed that an increased propensity to drink alcohol was associated with alcohol use behaviors. And again, a pretty consistent pattern here across the consequences, where the drinkers had higher scores across the consequences. Seems like the ones that were most high was consequence 4, which is enjoying the buzz, 9, which maybe some of us do, taking our mind off problems, right? Okay. And here's a summary of some major findings. There were cross-sectional associations between utility scores and alcohol use. A higher utility score means a greater odds of consuming alcohol. The MAU model did not longitudinally predict alcohol use among among adolescents. Okay. And there was an ethnic difference in the adolescent population, not an ethnic difference with the college population in our case. So, conclusion implications. The present study examined the variety of influences in adolescents and college students and the specific reasons coming out of their own mouths based on previous studies. Okay? And basically what we found with the adolescents and the college students, the results were parallel, at least for the cross-sectional part of it. Okay? And this study could be useful in developing an intervention which focuses on relationships between young people's alcohol expectancies and consumption. So if we know what they're thinking, we can speak to that a little bit better from an intervention perspective. So, any questions? Thank you. Uh-huh.
Which is interesting because that perception may or may not be true.
Right.
And also what we found in doing a literature review, there's not many studies, but a few looked at longitudinally when kids' attitudes towards alcohol changed.
Uh-huh.
Around the 4th grade, they start thinking that alcohol will make them more social.
Uh-huh.
So sort of going back to the previous recommendation of starting in elementary school.
Right. Right,
yeah.
Right. They at least they don't perceive it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Great. Thanks. Anybody else?
Anyone else?
Okay.
Any questions to other members of the presentation group? Any other comments on the topics of adolescence and drinking and how the drug use?
Wisconsin, where Eau Claire, Wisconsin, Western Wisconsin, had the highest rates of underage drinking, and we just threw a comprehensive grant funded through the Enter raised our
sure that I understand you correctly.
Maybe come to the microphone, please.
Yeah. I'm not sure that I understand you correctly, Senator Whitney. So I want to know, you know that drinking before, say, age 15 increases by 4 times the likelihood of you developing alcohol dependence. I guess I appreciate these early drinkers under the age of 13 being associated with increased risk of suicidal thoughts or acting out behavior or sexual. But what about is it incremental? Is, I guess, my question. That this is a 13-year-old versus a 14-year-old on age of onset. Does that increase your likelihood, as you go down, or is it just less than 13 and greater than 13?
Well, my idea was that I think that when you start to drink alcohol when you are less than 13, it's a big issue. It's a big issue because we know from the literature that the older you start to use alcohol, it's not less effect, but it's less problematic than when you start to be younger.
I guess I'm wondering, based on your data, did you see in 14-year-olds versus, age of onset at 14 versus 13 versus 12?
I may know the answer to that. I believe it's the case in the NESARC data, which is a national survey in which people were asked to recall the age at which they first drank. So we'll go back to however it's going to be recorded. That the finding is the earlier the age, the greater the probability of also reporting alcohol dependence or abuse. So that there are incremental contributions as far as.
Thanks.
I just don't want his parents to get the idea that if your kid drinks at 14, it's okay.
I have two comments, if that's okay. One is, can any of you comment on non-drinkers at the young age? Is that really a proxy for religiosity? Like, what would explain people who decide not to drink at a young age when their peers are drinking at that age? Any comment on that? Okay.
Yeah. It's going to be hard to kind of look at just, you could look at one and say that it affects it, but in the long run, I think that non-drinkers are, more of a really interesting species to study too.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Child, which is ADHD-like anyway, and just the fact that parents are working more than one job, so I'm not a lot of them, and I have teenagers 14, 15, 16, and 17, and I run the ATOB programs for my county, and I know everything there is to know about prevention and monitoring, but it doesn't always work.
I had another comment, and that is, are there any, can you say anything about access to alcohol? Are the people who are likely to be drinking at 13 more likely to be living close to a beer store, grocery store that sells alcohol, or is that just inconsequential?
I think there's GIS data that supports that. In fact, there's been some studies where they show.
So in addition to personality characteristics, home life characteristics, sure, there's also environmental characteristics that come into play.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Definitely. In the Florida survey, what we are trying now to do is cutting by counties and by geographical areas, and to try to divide it between rural areas, which I think that alcohol is. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of alcohol in those areas compared to the city, because it seems that, Miami is the city and everybody is drinking, but we see that in Florida, we see under age 13 drinking more in the rural
outside of Florida than sometimes in the city itself. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to divide it. We don't have
okay.
the zip code, however, we're trying to divide it.
Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I just, you know, Florida has a lot of resort areas too, and so, you know, that is another issue because I live in a resort, and there a lot of the community activities revolve around alcohol and remote alcohol, and then you have the seasonal people coming in, and they are of a certain age group that do that. You have the people that maintain a Peter Pan lifestyle for their whole life instead of growing up, and they have kids, and so, you know, it's just a lot of complications to study it straight out.
Yeah, just to add to that is, you know, if your parents think it's okay for you to drink at the dinner table, then, you know, your kids are going to think, hey, you know, my parents think it's okay to drink, so I can go out and drink as well. But some parents say, I want them to do it in front of me instead of going out and doing it with their friends. But you don't know that they're not doing it with their friends, too. And you're kind of like, your perception, the parents' perception of alcohol use, you know, in children, if your parents are giving you the drink, then they think it's okay. And so they keep doing it.
Okay. Any other comments? Questions? Anything the presenters want to say to anything? Fine. Anyway, thank you very much for your attention, and we're going to conclude for today. Thank you. Thanks. That was great. Good presentation.
It's syndicated, so we're on about 7 or 8 stations.
There's a new center for native health starting up in Cherokee.
Do you want me to jot the name of the show on the pad here? Just when you're sorting through all these cards after the meeting.
It's like, oh, what is it?
I can remember this one. I did that this morning.
Center for Native Health, starting up in Cherokee, North Carolina.
Okay.
You know, I may have is it being funded by some of the casino money and the different angles, different people in the country, you know, different things. I mean, I've had something on suicide prevention in Alaska Natives, but I mean, there's recently, is what I'm saying. So we try to vary the topics, vary the region, and, you know, vary the people who are doing the work. So, you know, sometimes they have Native American investigators, other times they have people who are, you know, outside of Indian country.
This particular center is really interesting because they're focused on extreme cultural competence among the investigators. So, you actually have to go in, and they're creating some of the materials in Native Cherokee language and so forth. It's really, really interesting. Now, diminishing returns, though, for some extent, because the language is spoken by so few people, but they're trying to enhance that.
It's more about that movement towards community, as Peter said.
Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating couple of meetings.
So if they're in Cherokee, North Carolina?
Yeah, Center for Native Health and LaFleur, I forgot her name, but I'm on the executive board, but I just don't.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember the director's name. It's right there.
Yeah. Okay, and you're in the East Tennessee?
Yeah, I'm in East Tennessee.
Okay. Good meeting you. Dave DeRose.
Yeah.
So how's the best way to track you down? You got a card?
You have cards? I don't have any more cards.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's the way it is.
Lisa Lafleur.
Good. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.